Hello, hello, I'm Joanne Pei and you're listening to What Do I Know? And as part of our lineup for International Women's Day on March 8th, I'm bringing you this three-part special where we're going to be discussing feminine issues, celebrating our bodies, and learning how to support one another as we navigate through difficult relationships. First up, I want to explore the topic of perimenopause and menopause because I've got some women friends who are going through this right now, and I think it's important for us to normalize and have conversations about it. Now, the thing is, we always complain about our menses, you know, the cramps, the PMS, you know, the quote-unquote inconvenience that it brings. But the thing is, when it ends for good, it doesn't necessarily make us happy either. So today, I'm bringing on OBGYN Dr. Chua Yang, who is the past president of the Asia-Pacific Menopause Federation, as well as our very own Menopause Research Society in Singapore. And with her knowledge on this topic, I'm really excited to hear how we can enter this stage of our lives with grace and dignity. Welcome, Dr. Chua.
Hi, Joanne. It's so nice to be here in your pink room.
Yes. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show.
You're
and
welcome.
For kickstarting this very special episode that we have. I really want to talk about menopause because I think it's one of those things that we don't explore because you don't really have like an institution that educates you on this, right? So I talk about this because before girls start to menstruate, you're in school, and then schools conduct this pre-puberty talk, and you kind of know, okay, when you start to menstruate, you have to wear a pad. What is it like? Don't be scared that there's blood coming out and all that, right?
Yes.
But then nobody teaches us what to expect when it ends, or you know, what can happen to us and our bodies. So it can throw some of us off, and I think that's also the reason why I think it's important for us to be informed on the topic so that we can better prepare for it. Now, I know you're so passionate about this topic, but I'm really curious, like, why?
Well, I'm passionate about anything that is women-focused. Okay. You know, as an OBGYN, my projects are always very women-centric. I love the concept of health education, prevention, doing something to build your future, to be brighter, to be better, rather than wait for shit to happen. Yes. And then, you know, deal with it. So anything that can help people prevent a problem, I like.
Okay.
So I really think that menopause is something that happens to every single woman.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to be prepared for what comes.
Okay.
And get through it in the best format ever. So what you said is very true. A lot of mothers look after their little girls when they start to have menses.
Right.
They're always looking out for preparing, getting them, you know, the first drop of blood, everybody gets all excited. It's like, oh, you can use pads now, that sort of thing. But when you get to menopause age, a lot of our mothers are not with us, are they? I mean, we're not living together, maybe. Mm. We have our own family, so... And they may not sort of be in the age group where they remember about their menopause. It would have been like 20, 30 years ago. So
right.
The little symptoms that they go through, they may not remember, even if you choose to ask them.
Mm.
Yeah, so then you have less guidance in that sense. So it's not an easy thing to go through when you have no clue what to expect.
Yes.
As a lot of my patients come and ask and they have no clue what to expect. I talk about menopause even to women who are expecting their babies.
Right.
It's as early as that.
Right.
I think, you know, lifelong journey requires preparation.
Mm,
so
I agree.
To have a healthy midlife, old age, you really have to have lifestyle choices that gear you up for that in the best way possible.
Okay.
So we can do something about it.
Why don't people talk about menopause enough?
I think there's a myth that menopause equals aging, and there's no woman that likes to be aged. If you know what I mean. Nobody likes the idea of, like, you know, pigmentations, wrinkles, and we are always thinking about the external rather than the general health.
Oh.
So if you equate menopause to a sudden change from somebody who was youthful to somebody that is now aged, nobody likes that.
Right.
If you don't like that, you're not going to tell the whole world that you've reached menopause.
Mm.
So you do not want to mention it. You don't want to bring it up to you. You want to be in denial. You want to try and pretend that you're not, you know. And a lot of women actually wish that their menopause was later. They want it as late as possible. And I want to tell you that it's not always a good thing to be late in terms of menopause.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, I hear friends around me now also complaining about the fact that they're having their menstruation, right? And I think to myself, like, you know, you're not going to have many more years. I mean, honestly, we're not going to have that many more years. If you think about it, it's just once a month, right? That's like 12 times a year.
You sound like you like it some.
I mean, I do believe in harnessing the power of our menstrual cycle. And in fact, the thing is, you know, having menses is not always a bad thing. It's just somehow...
it's part of life.
Yeah, and I think we are... I don't know if it's just... I don't know, societal thing or what. But, you know, we are made to think that having menses is a bad thing, right? Because, you know, we will have people saying, oh, yeah, see, her temper is so bad because PMS, this and that. So you always associate, like, menses with something terrible, right? And then they're like, so irritating, you know, this and that. You got to bring tampons, you got to bring pads. You know, but then I think about it and I'm like, now I'm also at the age where I think, hey, I'm not going to have that many more years left, you know, to enjoy this process of, I feel like it's a renewal every month anyway for me. So, you know, I'm not going to have that many more years to enjoy. So, yeah, like take it, you know, take it and accept it and see how we can sort of work with it rather than work against it.
Sure. Right? Well, the purpose of menstruation basically is setting up the womb lining so that we can conceive. Mm. So it's fertility driven. Mm. So, you know, there's, apart from having kids, the womb, the hormones, the cycles really don't do a whole lot more. But of course, our hormones do have some benefits to us generally. Hormonal stimulation to the breast keeps that perky, keeps that, you know, plump. Hormones to the skin keeps it also moist. Mm. There's a lot more dryness issue when you lack hormones. Mm. It's good for the bones, so it's good for bone health. It's good for cholesterol, so it's good for heart health. Mm. So when a woman menopauses very early, her heart health may actually suffer. When a person menopauses very early, her bone health will suffer. Mm. So we may talk about those medical issues following menopause. But when you also menopauses late, there's also a worry about breast cancer risk. Mm. The longer you have hormonal stimulation on your breast, the higher the risk of breast cancer. So in life, it's very fair. Right. It's never all good. All bad.
Right.
There's always pros and cons. There's always risks and benefits. So it's always this balance. In general, let's get some definitions straight, right? Menopause is the last menses. And it's retrospective because you need to have a 1 year without menses for us to realize that, oh, okay, so that last menses, that was at your menopause.
Right.
And in general, the normal age is between 45 and 55. Okay. Average age is about 50. Ballpark, about 50. If you reach menopause between 40 and 45, it's considered early menopause.
Okay.
If you reach menopause before 40, then there's a condition called premature ovarian failure.
Oh, if you reach before 40.
Before 40.
So that's not perimenopause.
No, that's not perimenopause. That means that from 40 on, you do not have menses and your hormones show menopause levels. So your ovaries have failed early. That's what it is. So it's premature ovarian failure. So, or insufficiency. So in any case, these are just definitions. And some women actually get to menopause because they had surgery to remove the ovaries or the womb for various other reasons, or both, for various other reasons. And then abruptly, they lose the factory that produced their hormones, and so they reach menopause surgically. Mm. So that's different ways to enter menopause.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the symptoms, if that's the right word to use?
Yeah, there are some symptoms that is associated sometimes with the erratic swings of hormones as you are running low on supply. Mm. When your ovaries are erratically producing hormones, so then your cycle's behavior may change. As early as 2 to 5 years before your very last menses, some girls may start to have slightly more irregular periods. Mm. So there are many people who reach menopause in different ways. Mm. For me, so it's like on time, and then no more. That's it.
Okay.
That was the last one, and then it didn't happen anymore, didn't come anymore. For some people, they will start to skip a month here and there. They will skip 2-3 months in a year. For 1 year, for 2 years, it's like that, just missing, and then it finished. And for some people, the cycles actually change to become shorter. Mm. Yeah, so their cycles, instead of that 28, 30 days, sometimes it shortens to 25 days, 26 days for a little while, and then it disappears. Mm. So you can enter menopause, or go through perimenopause in that sense in a variety of ways. The common symptoms that is associated with these erratic hormone behaviors would be like hot flushes, mood changes, night sweating, sleep, and therefore sleep disturbances, a bit of unusual aches and pains, like seng tia is what the women will complain about. And, you know, just sort of low energy, that inertia, that lethargic feeling. Those are common in Singapore too.
It sounds very much stress-induced too, you know.
Well, yeah, women are multifactorial. It's never just one button, right? So many things can affect us at this point in time. At 50, around 50, it could also be a stressful period as your kids start to leave house. It could be a stressful period as you're coming to maybe already peaking or past the peak of your career. And so things are starting to change. You're rethinking your career choices, your work-life balance, your general health. So there are many different stresses that may affect us at this point.
Right.
And so the menopause hormone situation maybe is exaggerating that a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. It doesn't create new problems. Like, for example, a lot of people talk about mood swings around menopause. It doesn't create a sudden paranoia or mental health issue. It tends to exaggerate what you're already slightly more prone to. So if you're quite a melancholic person, you know, you watch a sad movie and you may tear a little bit, around menopause that could be exaggerated. That depressed moods could then affect you in a bigger way. If you're already quite chop chop type A personality, you may get irritable more. You may get anger management issues. I mean, it can blow out of proportion. So what I'm saying is that the hormone change can exaggerate what you're naturally slightly prone to. And one hint of it might be what you already mentioned, the premenstrual tensions, you know, cyclically. If you're prone to low moods, if you're prone to outbursts, two different, slightly different formats. But if you're already going through that with the marginal changes of hormones, then at menopause, it could be worse. That similarity can also manifest around post-delivery in terms of the postnatal blues. These are all sort of mental status change with regards to hormone changes. So you may get a hint earlier in life what you may be more prone to at and around menopause.
Now you're making me a little bit scared.
Why?
Yeah, because it sounds like, oh my goodness, it's going to be like a really trying period.
It does, no.
You know,
it,
like,
it,
is there any way?
So we are talking that these are potential symptoms, but let me reassure you first. 80% of Singaporeans go through menopause with either no symptoms, very mild symptoms, or just super transient symptoms. A little bit fleeting, and then, you know, I thought that I had one hot flush or that sort of thing, and then just no more. Transient.
Hot flush, just meaning you just get hot.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
If we're in an air-conditioned room, not with bright light shining on us, and let's say that your partner is sleeping and it's nice and comfy, suddenly you're sweating, your blouse may get wet, you may feel almost like you're blushing, like red in the face, and sometimes perspiring. So that's an unusual hot, right? Sort of heat feeling that rises from the core. So these symptoms actually affect Singaporeans a bit less, I think, because women are in general used to the concept of hot, you know, walking from aircon room out. They get that already through life. So we're kind of acclimatized. So this is actually not one of the top three symptoms complained about in Singapore. Oh. Whereas in the Western society, the women feel hot flush a lot more. That's usually top.
So what is top for Asian women?
Most of the sleep disturbance, aches and pains.
So
tiredness.
Cannot sleep.
Some things that are more vague. Yeah. So hot flush is actually not one of the top priorities here.
Okay. Is there anyone who can sort of go into menopause with nothing?
Yes, absolutely. So as I said, 80% either don't feel much at all or don't feel anything at all. That means 20% only would self-profess that it's moderate to severe and wish to have something to help them.
Okay, before we go into what we can do to help them, is there anything you can do so that you will be in that 80%?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what is usual is that sleep disturbance, for example, right? Long-term sleep habits are very, very important. So for women, unfortunately, we're so emo about a lot of things. We think about a lot of things. We are so busy through the day. We are multitasking. Yeah. And a lot of women start to have bad sleep because they have kids. So habitually, from the time that they were nursing, getting up so often at night, being light sleepers, always listening up for the baby cry, always feeling scared that, oh, you're going to miss something, you're going to miss something, that is going to start the bad habit. So a lot of women are light sleepers to start with. They sleep poorly. Mm. And sometimes in the sleep time is when they have that final me time, when they're not needed by the family.
Yes.
Yeah, so you're hanging on to that little bit of me time, yes, and you're doing your own little thing. But that creates bad sleep habit. Oh. That's what's called bad sleep hygiene, right? So when that becomes exaggerated, then you're really going to sleep badly, right? So creating good sleep habits for yourself, making sure that you have disciplines for that, that's really important.
So do you mean like regular sleep?
Yes.
Getting regular sleep, like going to bed at the same
Your body clock is something that is very wonderful. When we miss on our body clocks, a lot of things starts to go wrong, right? Mm. If you wake up at the same time, you go to sleep at a certain time, you eat at a certain time, you poop at a certain time, a lot of things work better.
Right.
Yeah, but when you decide that I have so much work to do, I'm going to forgo 1-2 hours of sleep, I'm going to stay up longer, everything changes. You know, people get sick more easily when they're jet-lagged. Mm. It's the same thing. Things tend to fall apart because you're stressing your body.
Yes.
Your body doesn't know what's up. Hey, I'm supposed to be eating, but it's starving me right now, right? And then I'm not feeling all that hungry and you're gorging me right now. So those choices are bad. As consistent as you can for most of your life, you will do so much better. And it's good for hormones also to be consistent. Mm. So lifestyle choices are really, really important at any stage of life. And it certainly will help us in this period of time.
Other than maintaining good sleep habits,
yeah,
what other things may affect?
Exercise helps.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's very well documented that when a person regularly exercises, there's some cardiovascular exercise, or even things like yoga, Pilates, it helps calming, it helps sleep. It also helps, I mean, if you have a regular cardiovascular exercise, you say run or long walk or cycle through the day, you're perspired, your body temperature cools down. Mm. And exercise is a mood lifter. Mm. It increases your endorphins. So generally, you feel better. You know, it gives you a chance to improve your health in all sorts of ways. So your energy level is better rather than sort of wallowing in that low energy, do even less, do not want to go out and meet friends, you know, then it sort of ripple out to get worse in that sense. So lifelong good support system, good habits, good disciplines to keep that consistency in what you do, what you subject your body to, carries you a long way through and beyond menopause.
Other than that, I'm guessing there's also maintaining a good diet.
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like these three things.
Yeah, I don't know why everybody wants to get away. I mean, they all know and they all giggle about it, but they all seem to like, surely there's a faster, easier way.
it's really always just sleep, exercise, and...
But the question is, have everybody done it though? Is that doable? Is that maintainable?
Conceptually, it's not hard, right?
No.
But then so many of us just forgo it for some reason.
Yeah. So you're creating a lot of bad health yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because if you... You know, if you don't eat healthy, then by the time you reach menopause and you say, oh, the minute I reach menopause, you know, like I ballooned out, I gained weight and all that sort of thing. But it's actually a continuum. Mm. If you eat and drink and exercise exactly the same way every single day through life, you will still naturally gain...
But that's so boring!
Well, you will still gain a little bit of weight at menopause. You know, by 40, by 50, by 60, because your metabolic rate slows down.
Right.
Right? So in fact, you have to eat cleaner.
Yeah.
You have to eat healthier.
Yeah.
And you may have to work a little bit harder.
Yes.
If you want that weight to maintain.
Yes.
But it's life shouldn't be about a weight, a number. Yep. It should be about health and your energy and your ability to fight illnesses and diseases and look after your quality of life, right? So part of the reason why I really don't like the idea of menopause being associated with aging is that when we consider aging, it's like you have an ability and then you don't have an ability. You feel older, right? We were running, maybe not marathons, but we were running 2.4 quite easily when we were in school. Can you run the 2.4 at 40? Can you run the 2.4 at a decent time at 50, at 60, at 70? If you haven't exercised for a long time, you probably can't. But for a lot of my friends, they've been training for marathons. So they weren't running a marathon when they were in high school, but then now they're running a marathon.
Wow.
Well, I mean, like, how can you then say that she has aged, right? Her ability has gotten better, right? So she's even better than what she was before. So part of it is what you do to improve yourself, to be in the best state always.
Yep.
At whatever age, you have ability to do a lot more. We have that potential. Are we maximizing the potential is the question.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're eating healthy, it doesn't mean that at 50, at 60, you would definitely increase weight or, I don't know, have diabetes or high blood pressure or high cholesterol. It could be that you can stave that off for a lot longer, even with genetic input, family history. You can still work against it. But if you have family history of, say, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and then you just didn't care. Every day, you know, oily food, deep fried things, sugar, 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 bubble tea, chocolates, ice cream, every single day. Then are you surprised at 50 you're also diabetic, you're also, you know, high blood pressure and high cholesterol? Mm. And then those create other issues that we will have to look after, because cancer risk increases with obesity, cancer risk increases with diabetes too, or you know, the outcome of cancer is worse because of diabetes. So if you lifelong looked after diet and exercises and your lifestyle choices, then at 50 you don't have a risk factor for a lot of things. And then you can really zone in on quality of life. You can zone in on maybe the symptoms, looking after the symptoms better, not worrying so much if you do need a medication to help you through this perimenopause or just early postmenopause. There are much more options than you can have because your risk for all those bad things are not there. So the prep is really important.
So then you mentioned if you menopause late, you also have a risk for breast cancer.
Well, yeah. So on average, a person menopauses at about 50, right? We mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's say that there's a very average girl who starts menstruating at about 11, 12 years old, and then she will menopause at 50, right? So she has what's called neutral risk for breast cancer. Everybody has a risk, but this is neutral. Now, if this girl naturally starts menstruating even at 7, 8 years old, super early, and she also menopauses late, 58, still menstruating, it's not always good. It's not always later better. This girl actually has increased risk of breast cancer just naturally without a pill of medication because her lifelong exposure to hormones is so much longer, so many more years than that average girl.
So this thing that you're talking about, it's natural in us. It's not something that we did.
So it's just how much mileage you get from your ovaries, how much hormones it was producing naturally, started at what age, ended at what age.
Right.
So therefore, how many years of exposure to that hormone, to all the different parts, right? So if you expose your breasts to longer number of years of hormones, then it increases the risk of breast cancer. So similarly, a woman who reaches 50 but chooses to take hormones for the next 10 years, she increases the risk of breast cancer too.
Take hormones meaning?
Take hormones for other symptoms like hot flushes, mood changes.
Right.
So she has hormone therapy.
Right.
She wants to replenish the hormones that she lost because of menopause. So she wants to, in other words, artificially delay that. She wants to prolong her hormonal exposure so that the skin is not as dry, vagina doesn't get dry, so that she doesn't get mood changes, so that she feels good, let's say. Okay, so she takes from 50 to 60, then she does increase her breast cancer risk.
When you do this hormone therapy that you're talking about, do you mean that the girl would continue to menstruate?
It doesn't have to be. Some hormone therapy are period-free hormone therapy. It's just a low dosage, but every single day there is some hormone supplementation. It doesn't naturally lead to coming back of the cycles. It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
There are different formats.
So hormone therapy is it is one of the ways to help the 20% of women who may be suffering from the symptoms of menopause.
So we certainly don't prescribe hormones for everybody who reach menopause. That's not the way to manage menopause. And most women do not need hormone therapy because, as I said, 80% actually don't feel bad. You know, they have very minimal or they don't have any symptoms. So they really do not need a treatment per se. But for 20% of women who get pretty bad hot flashes, mood changes, sleep disturbance, and then, of course, those ripple effects, the relationship issue, the job efficiency, so on and so forth, that quality of life is imminently important too. And if that is the case, then hormone therapy is one format to help. It's the most reliable format for those symptoms. It does deal with the symptoms in the best possible way. Yeah.
Is it something you take for the rest of your life?
No,
or what?
No. We usually take it for about 2 to 3 years, possibly, just to get the transition a little bit more gradual, to let the body have a better space of time to sort of get acclimatized, to get used to that, to reduce the symptoms, and then we can tail it off, we can stop the medication. So it's never sort of meant for the rest of life. Yeah, very few women will need it for a protracted amount of time. That's rarer.
Are there any side effects to that?
Well, there's always pros and cons, as we say. Life is always about this fine tuning, fine balance, right? So just naturally, again, if you reach menopause late, there's that risk of breast cancer. But similarly, if you reach menopause early, there's also plenty of downside. Reaching menopause early gives you a slightly higher risk of heart disease. It gives you risk of bone loss too early and osteoporosis, risk of fractures, so on and so forth. So then the plus point of being on hormone therapy is that your cholesterol profile can be better. So your heart disease risk, if you start it early, can be better. You will then also delay that bone loss. So your bone health is better. Your risk of fracture is much delayed, is postponed. And so, you know, the bone health is better. Yeah, and of course the plus point is that hormones deal with all those symptoms that women are bugged by, you know, the hot flashes, the mood changes, the sleep disturbance. And then, by the way, because of the hormones, skin is not as dry, so the moisture is better, the vaginal health, so therefore sexual health is better, genital urinary tract health is better. Yes,
so you've talked about the pros. What about the cons?
The cons will be, with any hormone preparation, there's a risk of deep vein thrombosis, blood clots in the veins. So blood clots in the veins in general affects the Caucasian population slightly more, affects people who are obese, it affects people who smoke, already have blood vessel disorders. It also affects people with a family history of blood clots, and also for people who are sedentary. So if you sit down cross-legged and don't move at all for 5 hours, you know,
you get cramp.
Well, but the cramp is a sign that circulation is failed to a certain extent. So it's screaming for attention, like move. Yeah. It's like your smartwatch telling you move.
time
to move, right? So basically, you don't want to have a sedentary lifestyle at risk of that. So people who maybe fly for a living, who sits down, they have to do business traveling a lot, and they sit down on plane for long hours, long stretches, they have this risk of deep vein thrombosis. So all the planes will tell you, right, move, hydrate, and so on and so forth, is to prevent this particular condition.
Right.
So any hormone therapy can increase that risk. If you already know there's a family history, let's say, of very bad symptoms around menopause, your mom, your older sister, let's say that throughout your menstrual life, you had premenstrual symptoms. Let's say that you also suffered a little bit of postnatal blues, and you're thinking, okay, come menopause, I may have these symptoms. So I want to be in the sort of category of patients that can take hormones without too much fear. That's the key, right?
Yes.
What I want to have options.
Yes.
Right? So I want options to be able to deal with my symptoms without ending with another health scare or health problem. Then what you have to do really is to reduce those risk factors for those health problems. Therefore, don't be the obese woman, right? Don't be the smoking woman. So regularly exercise, don't be sedentary, so on and so forth. In that sense, you've cut down all the other risk factors. And even if you take hormones, you have one out of, say, five risk factors. You're not the woman who already has three other risk factors and then now you are really scared to add one more to the three. Do you
yes,
know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So therefore, again, it's about prepping yourself. Because once you're at menopause, you are that weight, you have been exercising or not exercising, coming to that point, it's very hard to like backpedal or change very last minute, right? To change your circumstance all of a blue. It's very hard for people to go back on years and years of habits, whether they are good or bad habits. Yeah, so it's really about understanding that lifelong lifestyle choices can lead you to be in a much better position to have at least options.
Yes.
We're not talking about everybody needing it.
Yes.
But we're talking about giving yourself options.
Like in case.
In case.
When I do need it. You know.
That's right.
My body is able to cope with it well.
Yeah, without too much of other worry, right? And of course, lifelong exercise, taking enough calcium, you know, moving, not being sedentary, also puts your bone in a much better bone health scenario anyways, which is a useful thought when you think about possible things that menopause can bring you.
Yeah, very important. One of the other possible things that menopause can bring is dry vagina.
Yeah.
Right? So I think we have to talk about this since it's a podcast where we explore taboo topics, you know. And this is also probably something that can be very embarrassing to talk about it as well, right? Like I am not having, you know, sex with my husband.
Who do you talk this through with, right? Maybe your best girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe most women don't talk about it with their husband. They feel shy.
Okay.
I don't know why, actually, with sexual partner, your lifelong partner, there shouldn't be a topic that you can't
talk about,
discuss, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one would assume, one would imagine that that should be the case. And boys have got midlife sexual health issues too, to be fair, that they also want to be in denial, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's good to be open about it and discuss what can we do to help, right? So in terms of vaginal dryness, it's also a very obvious outcome of reduced estrogen, one of the female hormones that's related to menopause. So sudden drop of estrogen. Unfortunately, this particular symptom doesn't get better with time. You know, the hot flashes, the mood swings and all that stuff?
They go away.
Usually disappear. You get acclimatized to the erratic swings and then it actually fades off after usually 2 to 3 years, right? But dryness in the vagina and dry skin is usually sort of building. Because when it gets dry, it gets more and more dry. And if you don't regularly have sex, then it's like you don't use it, you lose it a little to a certain extent. Because every time that you have sex, you have arousal, it lubricates itself.
Right.
Right. So you're missing that element as well if you're slow to get aroused. Yeah. So it gets harder and harder. And of course, when you don't stretch the skin there, it gets tighter. It's harder to stretch. Yeah, so you feel a little bit more uncomfortable, a little bit more pain. Sometimes you bleed a little bit, almost like having paper cuts there with dryness. That's one common complaint. So it's something that really should be prevented, hopefully, if not dealt with as soon as you recognize that there is this issue.
Okay.
Rather than 5 years down because your doctor happened to be one that asked about it. And then you realize, oh, you mean I could have done something about it? A bit late lah to again
control
in that sense.
What could be done?
There are various things that you can do. For sexual health, you could, if you think it's only a very small issue, you could lubricate. So just lubricants, moisturizers, not just lubricant, but moisturizers can help. those that are meant for vagina.
Yes, yes.
Yes. So that's one way to just on an ad hoc basis deal with it. But these methods don't generally improve the vaginal health on a longer term basis. Mm. But to try to maintain the vaginal health, you could use a very low dose estrogen, but topically.
Oh.
So the medication is not really absorbed into your system. So you're no longer worried about things like the deep vein thrombosis or breast cancer risk, or that it will cause bleeding again or anything like that. It doesn't do that. It's actually only working on the vagina so that the vagina doesn't get too thin, doesn't get too tight, it doesn't get too dry. And that also improves the urinary symptoms as well. Mm. So a lot of dryness down there can lead to vaginal infection and urinary tract infection.
Mm.
So by using this on a longer term basis, you're preserving the vaginal health, which will improve your urinary symptoms, urine control, the vaginal health, therefore sexual health.
Mm.
So it's something that definitely can be done if you want to so-called bother with exploring those options. The options are out there.
So when do you know that, you know, you should be using this option versus, for example, just lubricating would do?
Well, I think it's about the general feeling. Some women, when it's not even just about sex, in general, they do feel that their vaginas are dry.
So during then, menopause, or you're saying,
or post-menopause, menopause.
Around menopause, yeah.
Some women actually feel it even before the last menses.
Mm.
So it's very variable. But if you generally feel that it's dry, it can lead to an itch feeling. So then you go see a doctor, you complain of an itch. Some GP or your gynecologist may actually treat you again and again for an assumed fungus infection, which isn't there. So when you actually swab it, there's no germs there, there's no actual fungus infection, the itch still persists. So you have to be very careful, is it related to a dryness issue rather than an actual infection, and don't overly treat, assuming it is always an infection.
Mm.
So some discussion about this is important.
Mm.
So if you think that it is dry, then, you know, you can't just sort of, it's not like a daily lubricant, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I see.
So awareness, so listening to your body and being aware what you're feeling, and then speak to the correct healthcare provider. I think that's very important.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think because when we talk about sexual health, the person that is related to this will be our partners, right?
Yeah.
And I think when a woman goes through menopause, it's not just her partner. Sometimes it could be just friends and family around them who could be receiving the ripple effect.
Sure.
So I guess my curiosity now is like, what can the woman do?
Mm.
And also, what can we do if we know that like our friends are going through this? Or what can the men do, you know, when they know that their partners may be going through this menopause?
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things you can do is to arm yourself with information, right? Mm-hmm. So your podcast is really helpful. So,
that's a start. You know,
yeah, it's a start, right? To be able to talk about it freely and not feel that you have anything to be shy about. Mm. Because really, this is a very normal phase that every woman goes through.
But, you know, maybe they worry that their husbands will...
Well, let's start with the girlfriends. The girlfriend should be able to talk about it, especially when we tend to have friends similar age, right?
Yeah.
You tend to grow up with like school friends, schoolmates that are lifelong friends, and you should be open enough to be able to talk about such things. This should not be a thing that you feel shy about. If you compare notes on your pregnancies, your, you know, the first time that you were breastfeeding, and, you know, sleepless nights and so on and so forth, this is another one of the topics that should be shared between girlfriends.
Mm.
And if you're open to talk about your girlfriends, it normalizes that conversation, that topic.
Mm.
And then maybe you don't feel so abnormal going through some of these symptoms, because some of the other girlfriends would have gone through it. Some may be better, some may be worse.
Mm.
And if you're always listening out for like public education, looking out for the topic, and of course, media should talk about it more.
Yeah.
Right? If it's in... It's very sexy to talk about fertility issues at a public forum, but there are very much fewer public forums wanting to talk about menopause.
Mm.
Maybe they talk about aging and like skincare and stuff like that.
Very physical related.
It's not very sexy to talk about actual menopause. Mm. You know, so maybe there should be more of these events, because really we are a society that is going to spend a lot more of our time post-menopause. You know, nobody talks about this 100 years ago, because lifespan was about 50.
Mm.
But now our average lifespan in Singapore is like 86, 87, right? We have so much more time past menopause. Mm. You want to make sure that those periods of time, 30, 40 years, are going to
are
be
well-lived.
Good,
yeah.
good quality of life.
Yes, after working so hard.
Yes, absolutely.
After like, you know, being so tired raising children now that they're finally grown up and they can have their own lives.
It's actually very liberating to reach menopause. Let me tell you that.
Oh, now this is reassuring.
Yeah.
Now you make
it's very liberating to travel and not have to pack like a tampon or a pad or be like, you know, suddenly blindsided and then having to go into a pharmacist.
Or worried that, oh no, am I having another baby?
Okay. Well, yes, that's the other good thing, isn't it? You don't need a birth control anymore. Yeah. You don't need contraception anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also doesn't mean that when you hit menopause that you can't have sex anymore, right?
It's not absolutely not.
It's just, you know, like,
I feel very sad when some patients come and, you know, I always proactively ask them about their sexual health because, you know, of the awareness. But it's very sad when somebody tells me, oh, at this age, where God? But at what age shouldn't there be? Mm. You can have sex until whatever age you wish to be, as long as it's with the right partner, you have a loving relationship, you're respectful of each other, you are physically close, you just can't get enough of each other. Why not? Right? And you know, everybody has that sex in the Hollywood glam version of what it should be, the hot sex. But there are so many different formats of very loving sexual relationships. Mm. And I don't think that women should feel that there's an age limit to that. Mm. But certainly you want to preserve your system to be able to participate in that, should you have.
Which is why I think what we talked about earlier is important, because it could be a cycle, you see, meaning, you know, because I feel dry and I feel, you know, uncomfortable having sex. And then
that would be so sad though.
And then I reject. And then after a while, it's like,
But on the other hand, they get insecure because they know the husband may still be sexually active or their sexual partner still is keen to have sex.
Yeah,
so the problem with not talking about it, frankly, is that you're creating misunderstanding. Mm. I mean, if your sexual partner keeps getting rejected, it's not a good feeling.
Yes.
They may think that there's some other reason, and that's not a great way to have that tight relationship. Mm. Mm-hmm. That loving relationship. So I think a fair, frank conversation is an important one that we shouldn't shy away from talking about it.
Mm. And anything else that friends could do or husbands could do?
Yeah. I mean, husbands should have a concept of menopause. I mean, heck, husbands should have a concept of andropause too. I mean, there are changes when they come to midlife too. So it's again, you know, just general awareness of where you are health-wise and feeling-wise at different phases of life, and to be in sync with each other, to be able to grow old together in all, going through all the different stages, supporting each other.
Mm.
That's really, really important. Similarly, husbands are very important when it comes to pregnancies.
Yes.
First few months of the baby care and being participative. It's always a sign of a keeper, right?
Mm.
So it's important that life partner is with you every step of the way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Andropause in the men. do they go to a gynae for that?
They go to a urologist possibly.
Ah.
Yeah. Or some family physicians may deal with it.
Okay. Yeah. Do they also like go through the hot flushes, mood swings and all that kind of stuff? I don't know.
Well, men have mood swings too, and that could be lifelong too. That's not in my specialty, so I'm not going to talk about that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I guess also sometimes for us to openly be the first one to initiate the conversation.
Yeah.
Right? Also, like if our friend is going through or we think our friend may be going through, that to be the first person to initiate the conversation, you think?
Yeah. One thing very, very important is healthcare workers should take the lead, because you're in the know. You have no excuse. You know that this happens at this age.
Mm.
Then you should maybe proactively mention it, whether you're a GP or your gynecologist or your urologist. You know, if a person comes in, maybe just ask, oh, is there any sexual concerns? Is there any sexual health issues? You know, just mention that at this age, sometimes it leads to dryness. If it does affect you, there are different options we can discuss. If it doesn't affect you, that's fine. Know that these things can happen. Leave it there, right? So that there's this awareness, it's on the radar. So healthcare workers really have no excuse. They really should bring this up. And then as a ripple effect, more people get to hear about it, right? So all the women get to hear about it. They may then sort of read a bit about it. And these days you can Google everything.
But honestly, a lot of information is very geared to the West.
Absolutely sure. Yeah, I feel that's like true.
I always do feel that Asian body, Asian women bodies and Caucasian women bodies
are different. To a certain extent, women are in Asia, maybe also traditionally, we're just really conservative. We don't grow up talking about sex. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we were taught, you know,
or our private parts, actually.
Yeah, exactly, right? A lot of mothers don't even spell it out that that's the vagina. Yeah. Like, I don't know what they call it these days. But so they shy away from anatomy, parts, terms, proper terminologies. There are a lot of women who don't even dare to wash that area properly, you know, or touch that area or put in a tampon, you know. So then they have issues with like vaginal tablets that treat infections or pills or things like that. So you know that they are brought up a certain way not to, like, you know, please don't touch that part, you know, don't poke anything in there or something like that. So I think that all may change with more awareness, with more better education, and sexual health being taught in school is definitely a big step forward. So hopefully down the generations, it all gets a lot better. We're a lot more open. And then the conversation gets started.
I do think sometimes at this age, you know, you have so much on your plate. Like, this could be the last thing that you think about because you're worrying about everybody else. And especially if you're a mother, right? You're worrying about everyone else.
Yeah, but one of the mental health issues at this age is also related to the stresses that they go through at this age. Because, you know, you may spend your pretty much your adult life sort of fussing over young kids, right? Babies, then toddlers, then school-age kids, getting them, like, cleaned up and fed and washed and, you know, homework done and then sent off to school and then bedtime and so on and so forth. So your daily routines are fussing about kids. And then by when the kids are 20 some, they finally leave, there's this void, there's this empty nest scenario, which then creates sometimes an anxiety or a panic, like, what's my purpose? What's my value? And that could exaggerate also those mood changes at this specific age. And that's difficult to navigate. As I said, for women, it's never a one-button situation. We're multitasking, and so many buttons affect us in different ways.
I think it's, you know, it's important also that we know that there's also sort of like a spectrum of the symptoms that will show, right?
For sure.
In some women, it's more serious than others. Yep. And while some people may sail through it, some may, you know, go the other extreme.
I have seen women sort of succumb to all the mood changes, so much so that they either have attempted suicide or successfully attempt suicide, you know, successfully go through that suicidal thoughts and action. And that's very, very tragic because they feel so helpless and misunderstood and perhaps without family support, without good guidance, and they just feel that they're just going crazy. I'm just going crazy. You know, I can't sleep at night. I'm tearing all the time. Like, nothing is worth it anymore. That nobody needs me at this age. I'm failing at work. I'm failing at home. I'm failing as a mother. So on and so forth. It's very attacked from all sides.
Yes.
You know, so we're supported by so many different factors in life that props us up. Right, the fact that we have our health, the fact that we have our family support, our career perhaps, you know, so our financial stability, our home, you know, a sanctuary to retreat back to, these are all our day-to-day support system. If everything or most of these support systems all fail at once, you know, you feel that you don't have your health, suddenly you're losing your job to a younger chick, you know, for example.
It's like all just making the whole aging
thing. And
then
you call your kids, your kids say, I'm busy, you know, don't call me, I'm busy now, or what not. And then you feel suddenly you're not needed by your kids. Your husband, if he's not supportive, and he's like, why are you switching the aircon on so high, you know, at night? You know, I'm already very freezing cold, you know, and then they start quarreling and... or they don't have sex anymore, you know, so many different similar things that is actually related to menopause, but it just happens around the same time. Then you get overwhelmed. Suddenly you feel like it's your fault. You're the one that's like
causing the trouble
off the cliff.
Yep.
So that can be very tragic.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why I also do feel very passionate about this topic, and to hopefully, you know, bring more awareness. I do have a question for women who reach that age, but then they are still single.
Yeah.
Like how can they sort of maintain the sexual health that we're talking about?
Well, you're talking about single but sexually active.
No.
Or single and never had sex.
And not sexually active.
Yeah, but you know, vaginal health is not really just for sex. Vaginal health also, like I say, impact the vaginal infection rates, urinary tract infection rates.
Yeah, because you mentioned like when you use it more, right? Then you if you don't use it, like, you know.
No, I know. I mean, unless you want to masturbate and use it just for your own pleasure, that's possible. But the vaginal dryness does affect all the other elements, like the infections, for example, or the sense that it's itching all the time. Just as dry skin actually makes us feel a little bit more sensitive.
Yep.
Same down there.
Right.
So even those symptoms really should be improved upon.
So is there any place that, you know, women can go to if they want to learn more and, you know, they want to discuss this?
Well, I'm hoping that on and off there would be public health forum that is related to menopause. But as a personal awareness and maybe dealing with symptoms that you may already feel you're at risk of or already feeling, then the most appropriate thing is to check with your own healthcare worker. So if you lifelong have a GP that you're always visiting for all sorts of minor ailments, that may be a starting point because there's a pre-existing relationship. If your GP is frequently changing or you don't commonly see your GP, then maybe the gynecologist is the one. If you've been visiting for, say, pap smears or regular checks, or that gynae has taken you through your pregnancies, maybe that would be another good person to sort of address these issues. And it's more personal because you don't care if everybody else has whatever symptoms. You are trying to address you and what you are feeling or what you're feeling insecure about. Or, you know, you may want to talk about your sexual health. And so perhaps the gynecologist is one person that should give you a good advice. If that gynecologist does not deal with menopause, then he or she may refer you to somebody who does. Yeah. So those would be better, more specific medical advice.
Okay. I think that's good advice. Sometimes, you know, having like a professional opinion, you know, you feel more assured because obviously you're not the only person that
Important to know that what options you have in life, right? We want to know what we can do. That's a very empowering thought, right? If we're discussing this now, you know, a decade before you reach menopause, let's say, you are prepped, you know, and you have options. And what you're going to do from today is go empower yourself to do better.
Yes.
Right? Lifestyle choices wise, health wise, you do better. So by the time you get to your menopause, you're in a much better sort of awareness state and you're much better physical state to deal with it at that time. And by that time, hopefully there are a lot better options for you. Anyways,
I mean, I want to be the one I want to think that I'm going to be the one to kickstart this conversation at least, you know.
Sure.
And really I'm also a firm believer of prepping for the future, like preventive, you know.
Yeah.
Like if we are informed and when something happens, you're not lost. You know, you're not struggling.
Yeah.
And so this conversation has been really enlightening. Is there anything that you want to share that I may not have touched on?
Well, I think generally it's all about awareness, you know, and please remember that you should not deal with menopause only at menopause. Mm. You know, I normally talk about menopause even to the mothers who are expecting during their pregnancy, because a lot of things affect if they're not, for example, supplementing their calcium. Then they go through a lot of loss of their calcium from their own bones through the pregnancy and breastfeeding. Mm. They already start bone loss.
Mm.
And when it comes to menopause, they have already less to lose.
Mm.
And during that accelerated period of bone loss, they're in a worse state. Mm. They get to their osteoporotic fracture much sooner than later. So that awareness means lifelong, even as a child, building bones until 30, you know, where you've reached your peak bone mass. That means you've banked in as much as you possibly can. So your bank account for bones is so much more rich that when you come to the accelerated bone loss, you have so much more to lose.
Wow.
Yeah. So when you lose, you don't immediately get osteoporotic, you don't immediately get a fracture, right? So if you were not aware of that, then throughout your pregnancy, throughout breastfeeding, maybe you've gone through some already early bone loss and you're not aware.
Mm.
So prepping is lifelong. It's always lifelong.
I frequently get the question about, you know, oh, how do you maintain your looks and you look so youthful? And this fear of aging is very real. But,
yes. You
know, I always tell people that I'm more concerned about taking care of my health from the inside. You know, actually, I fear more aging inside.
Mm.
Because I think whatever happens inside shows on the outside anyway, right? And so I think, you know, I want to stress the importance of taking care of ourselves, not just on the outside, but inside as well.
Yep.
You know, and we women, we have a lot of hormones. I mean, you know, some women, they go through like this, you know, like we talk about the PMS and all that. You know, it's the hormones just, you know, getting screwed up, like, basically. We really need to do what is good for ourselves and our bodies.
Yes.
And I think understanding our bodies and learning about what we can do to nourish our bodies rather than go against it would benefit us, you know, in the long run, in so many areas of our lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're right. From inside, it's so much better. A lot of women are concerned about aging, and a lot of it is superficial, right? Mm. The skin aging, for example. So it's correct. After menopause, when you lose the estrogen, you are more prone to pigmentations, dryness. But that skin care should start from young. Right?
Again, you cannot be lazy.
I mean, if you're a kid and like when I was growing up, that was a long time ago, but when I was growing up, it was very sought after to have that tanned look.
Yeah.
Everybody was going nuts trying to get dark.
Yeah.
Right? So it's actually very bad for the skin.
Mm.
But if you're aware and you teach your little girls that you should stay away from that sun exposure. So from young, there's a good routine to moisturize, to sunblock, to make sure that you drink enough water. Those good habits is going to keep the skin good for as long as possible, right? So it's really not just like menopause, aged, wrinkles.
Mm.
It's not that way. It's lifelong prevention, maintaining, having those good routines that will carry you a long way down the road. And a lot of women are very scared always about drinking water. Half my patients are like, I don't know how they survive on that little water. You know, when I ask them, how much do you drink? And they say, oh yeah, I drink enough. I drink plenty. And then, okay, how much is plenty? My plenty is at least 2 liters a day. What is your plenty? 2 liters. Oh. No, maybe one bottle. You know, they don't drink enough. Mm. I think maybe they're scared they'll go pee a lot. Maybe the pregnancy made them get to those bad habits again, because during pregnancy, you do need to pee a bit more. And they're shy always of standing up and going to the toilet as a working adult, maybe. So there's a lot of sort of dehydrated women out there.
Right.
And that is a formula for bad skin.
Okay.
That's a bad formula for circulation.
Right.
Yeah, it's and dryness, right, all around. So it's important that these good routines, good habits are lifelong. It's really not possible to come 50 and then try and change everything. Realizing that, oh, now I'm feeling it. Well, at some point you will feel it. If you're always skipping meals, at some point you're going to have that gastric pain for the first time.
Yes.
Right?
Like, you don't feel it at that age when you're younger.
You think you're invincible.
Yeah. And then 20. As you get older, you start to pay the price for that. I hope our conversation today with Dr. Chua has given you new insights, piqued your curiosity, and given you a new perspective on women's health. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and share it with your friends. You can also find a video version of this podcast with some bonus content over at my YouTube channel, Two Happy Media. That's TWOHAPPYMEDIA. If you're on Spotify, you can also now play this podcast as a video. Make sure you also follow the podcast on Instagram at What Does Joanne Know. Thank you for listening. See you the next episode. Bye.
This was the Zodapop podcast.